Welcome to another week of Free Basketball. I am your host, Ryan Meadows, joined by the Triangle. The original of the Triangle offense is back with Daniel Greer and Cody Holsey. How is everyone, Cody? How have you been? Haven't seen you in a couple weeks. How was your holiday rush?
My holiday rush was fantastic. I was sick the week of Christmas. That was fun.
Of course, yep.
And then it snowed on New Year's Day. That was that.
Did you also contract COVID like me and Daniel did over the past 2 weeks?
No, I did not. I think I had a really bad sinus infection, possibly the flu, but I did not have COVID. Two negative tests throughout the height of my sickness. Mm. So I'm still COVID free. That's the way it would be.
Daniel,
that virus can't get me.
You're just all good. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not through at the Red Door. The Red Door grill is free.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that, but I know that I'm dodging it. Like I'm out here playing dodgeball.
You know? Daniel,
can't dodge a wrench, you can dodge COVID.
Yep.
Well, I got. Thanks a lot, Cody. I got.
Yeah. Well, you should
smacked upside the head.
You should have moved faster. Because that's my thing. It's like you got to be confusing with it. You got to zag when other people are zigging. As far as like you got to run a serpentine pattern. Sometimes you got to move backwards. You got to keep COVID on its toes, guys.
Well, we're obviously back together, the Triangle. If you've listened to us in the past, you know this is bound or tend to happen multiple times throughout. And it's probably going to happen tonight because we have two topics. First off, I have been putting this off on purpose because Daniel is our fearless leader over at Grizz 901. And I hate to step on his toes. And also, a lot of times I am a special guest on there. So
step on his toes. I love that.
I'm a guest, not special.
No, you're the co-host of the show.
I'm just special, not a guest. There's no whatever.
Can't say that. It's 2022.
I don't want to say the same thing twice. You know, people listen to both. I don't want them to hear me say the same things over and over. But this week, screw it. We have to talk about this team just from where they are right now. And that's the Memphis Grizzlies. Okay.
I thought it was the Kings.
If you don't listen to Grizz 901 or listen to us in the past, welcome and thank you for turning us on in the first place. You probably turned it off in the first 45 seconds where Cody was giving you dodging strategies to COVID. But if you still made it this far, we are from Memphis.
Disclaimer,
Tennessee.
Those do not work.
They don't work, okay? And we are going to talk about the Grizzlies for Grizz super fans. And it's time. This is a general NBA podcast. You have to talk about one of the best teams right now in the NBA and the Western Conference, and that's the Memphis Grizzlies. So we're going to talk about them. A lot of questions. The thing about it is I'm going to have to turn off the diehard fan of the Grizzlies and be the objective question guy. So Daniel gets to be right in his element, gets to answer all my questions and counter arguments. Yeah, he gets to be the homer. I get to give the counter arguments. Cody gets to chime in as well. And then at the end, I do have an all-star game selection kind of theory that I asked you guys the questions earlier today. I don't know if it'll be a super in-depth kind of thing or maybe it's a pretty simple answer, but we're going to get to that at the end too. So hopefully it won't be too long of an episode. We'll try not to embellish Daniel too much with Grizzlies talk, but we'll just kind of see what this goes. But the Grizzlies, 27-14. Fourth in the West, currently beating the Los Angeles Lakers as we're recording. Are they still up by 20, Daniel?
23.
They're up by 23 right now. All right. Beating the Lakers. They're 8-2 in their last 10. Four games up in their division, I believe, last time I checked on the Dallas Mavericks. And from when Ja Morant went out a couple weeks or almost a month ago, it feels like now, we had a podcast back then that was saying that, look, we were just kind of hoping they were going to go 500, or if they're a little less than 500, that would be in, you know, a good scenario for us. And they just kept winning and they haven't stopped winning. What was their record for actual December? Was it something like 12-4, something like that?
12-4.
So they have been awesome. They have started to lose people like other teams have. Dylan Brooks twists his ankle the other night. He's looked to be out 3 to 5 weeks. But even with Ja, Bain, Melton, Brooks, you know, all kind of guys sitting out over and over and over, it has not mattered. The Grizzlies have kept winning and exceeded expectations. So, Daniel, first off, have they greatly exceeded your own expectations coming into this year, or is this something that you foresaw with this team?
No. So they've easily exceeded my expectations. And even now, like, I am a diehard Atlanta Braves fan. I'm a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan. And if you're wondering why Memphis, we don't have baseball. We don't have football. I'm a 90s kid. I grew up. Those were the good teams, right? And that's what I ended up cheering for. Plus, my grandmother made me. So that, you know, two things I can't go against.
Who's your college team?
That's the Florida Gators. Which?
In which sport?
Just football. Just football.
What other teams do you like in the other sports? Who's your favorite college baseball team?
College baseball, I stick with Florida just because I think that's the smart thing to do.
Not sure.
But unfortunately, I am a Duke Blue Devils basketball fan as well.
He's a Dukie.
I'm a 90s kid. I did not understand exactly what I was doing when I was cheering for these teams. I was cheering for them because they were cool teams. I'm just going to. You know, and my whatever elementary school, our mascot was a gator. We were the Gators, and so that's where the whole Florida Gators thing turned into. Anyway, enough about me. Everybody's turned off by now. But yes, I
can't believe I got you to go on that rabbit trail.
Quick, Cody, give us some more COVID dodging strategies. Bring it back.
Right. Really. So basically, like, you got to move laterally. Lateral movement is key. If you're not doing lane drills every day, you're not trying to fight against COVID.
Bring it back in.
I'm the trying. Expectations.
Right? I'm really it. So, yes, because I am one of those fans, I get let down continuously. Like, my expectations go high, and right when they start getting a little bit high, I know 100%, just like next weekend, the Cowboys will lose the first round playoff game against the San Francisco 49ers. That's exactly what's going to happen. So I try to, you know, dampen my expectations, you know, enough, but man, they've exceeded my expectations now to where I'm getting to the point of they might really be a good basketball team. Now they're not contenders, so I don't want to go too crazy yet, but yes, they have exceeded my expectations in a very, very long-winded answer. Exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, I definitely exceeded my expectations. Now, Cody, what about for you? Because you have not, you moved away from Memphis. You betrayed everyone. So let's hear just on the outside looking in now that you're in Patrick Mahomes country, what's your feeling about the Grizzlies from what you've been seeing from us and just in general watching the NBA?
They have a lot of guys that are good at different things. Like, they're just, I don't know. Like, if you look at the really good teams in the West that are, you know, underperforming, say, like, the Lakers, this is just the one that, you know, is easy to pick on.
Since they're playing them tonight, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, that team doesn't have a very strong bench. And, like, the Grizzlies are also a team that, like, I feel like has an identity. And you know, just watching them like throughout the year and stuff like that, like Ja will like set a screen for somebody and like do some stuff. Like he doesn't just like, oh, it's not, I don't have the ball, like I'm not going to do anything. Like he still like plays basketball within the, like, you know, and likes to get other people involved and stuff like that. And watching the Grizzlies, like he just looks like he's a lot of fun to play with. And I think that like having a guy like that on your team that like can really like night to night, like, you know, night in, night out, make a difference. I saw a thing today that showed LeBron's different averages from like age 18 to like different to like, I don't know, like 27 and now like 36 or whatever. And it was all the different like averages and they're all very consistent. So something that like with Ja for the last, like, you know, this season, last season and the season before is like, he's pretty consistent, like night to night, like you know what you're getting from. Like, he's going to come out and he's going to compete. He's going to have a chip on his shoulder about it the whole time. And there's, you know, the other day he was like saying something about like why he's not scared of people or whatever. Like, we put our shoes on the same way. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, and just having that mentality, I think, like, goes a really long way in the NBA. That, like, he's not walking out there and looking at LeBron and being like, oh my God, that's LeBron. He's like, I will kill you.
Yeah. 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 It's for someone that young to have like, you're my peer mentality, yeah, instead of you're my basketball god or idol, you know?
Right.
It's that fearlessness, which I think everyone on the team has also bought into. Like, Jaren mm-hmm. Jackson Jr., he's been up and down. You know, we obviously see the talent, and he's kind of awkward in interviews and press conferences and stuff like that. But he truly buys in and kind of follows what Ja mm-hmm. does.
Well, he's younger than Ja.
And he's younger than Ja. Yeah. And with Desmond Bane, like, I feel like that whole group, you made a great point with them all liking to play together, because just using the Lakers, maybe I don't hate picking on the Lakers, but when you sign 10,
it's fun to pick on LeBron a little bit.
When you sign 10 different free agents and expect to generate chemistry within a season to be able to make a run in the playoffs, that's really hit or miss, right? Like, that usually does not happen very often. Most of these teams that make runs or have good regular seasons and make runs in the playoffs have continuity, at least somewhat, unless you just have a weird year, like the Lakers year where they won the championship in the bubble. We're not going to get into all that, but now the Lakers are starting to have a little bit of continuity. Is that, do you think, one of their biggest factors, Daniel, on why they're having success? Is just, they are young. Yes, they're one of the youngest teams in the league, but this is year two or three for the most part of them all, this kind of core all together. Now, we know we've moved out JV, brought in Steven Adams, essentially the same player. Well, okay, I shouldn't say the same player, but they essentially do the same kind of roles for this team. And Steven Adams is no slouch in the tough guy department. Right. And so we see this with, like, Utah Jazz, the continuity, the Suns, the continuity. Is this why they're having such early season success to you? Is just their continuity as a team, because they have had the injuries and the people in safety protocols.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why they're actually being, reasons they're being good right now. And it's not for one specific reason. It's because, for the simple fact that they did get off of JV and they got, you know, Steven Adams back, but they also are deep enough that they can sustain these either injuries or the COVID, you know, protocols that these people are being put in, and these other players they're stepping up. And so I said in the very beginning of the season, they're one of the deepest teams in the league, because their 12 guy is really good. And before we even got, we talked about the Grizzlies, and we said that Zaire Williams, you know, would probably be their 12th guy. He ends up being their 8th guy. And then Santi Aldama, who nobody knew about, and we said that the Grizzlies would probably be, they think that they're the smartest guy in the room. They're actually not. Well, come to find out, they might actually be the smartest guy in the room, because they got Santi Aldama and Zaire Williams, and they're both really good. Plus the other players that they've kind of put in work in with Zaire, you know, with John Conchar, and players like Killian Tilly, who they have down in the G League, are now putting in important minutes during a time when everybody else is going to these players who they've never heard of. And so the Grizzlies are playing people that are still good, but are actual NBA players. That's the reason that they are good, but it is the team chemistry. And I think they are now in the post-game interviews, they're talking a lot about that, for the simple fact that I think that they don't want to get traded. And I know that's something stupid and small, and maybe that is realistic, and that's very humanized, that they might actually be saying that because they want to keep this team together. But there's players on this team that could be traded off, because they think that, hey, if we combine a couple of these players, we can get one extra good player. And so who knows? But I do think it's a combination of stuff. But I do think the team chemistry goes so far, because you don't have that, especially with a team like the Lakers, who is just a bunch of dudes that kind of got brought together for one year.
Yeah, and it's obviously, you like, especially on Grizzlies Online, you like to give a lot of props to Taylor Jenkins for what he's done. And there is something to NBA players, and it feels like the most common complaint of NBA players a situation doesn't work out for them, they usually blame the coaching staff, right? Or they just weren't allowed to do something, or coaches got upset if they did something and they sub them out, not play them for whatever, you know. But it seems like Taylor Jenkins is just kind of, look, like, we trust you to do your job. This is your job. This is what we want you to do. Go play. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of hamstring. Like, I don't know if maybe it's eventually a weakness if this team progresses in next year or two and making a run in the playoffs and Taylor Jenkins is not calling out Jaw, who has tendencies to fall asleep on defense, just like Dylan Brooks does. He doesn't seem to call those players out. Maybe that's not something that he does publicly.
Right.
And I'm sure there's people who have differing opinions on that. To me, it's, if that's your style, then that's your style. It's probably more effective and efficient to do it privately. And that's maybe what he's doing, is the accountability on that. We just don't see it on TV, right? Yeah. He's just not a guy that's going to call someone out in a huddle. Or at least if he has, we have not seen it. He has not been, his demeanor does not change. And maybe that's what these young players like about him, is that he'll give them the free rein. He's even keel. So even if I do go out there and just bomb a couple threes, like Dylan Brooks or Triple J will pick up 3 fouls in 2 minutes, it seems like, I'm not getting an earful of it from the sideline like my college coach or my high school coach would have done to me. Now, he has gotten better, Taylor Jenkins, at X's and O's after timeouts. He still doesn't call any challenge timeouts, but
he's gotten better as of late with that.
With that, anyways, but he's just not a demonstrative guy. Is this something that you think is healthy for the young players right now and can continue into the future with Taylor Jenkins? Because we talked about it before, and I don't want to get into that whole conversation before, but is this a possible potential roadblock if there's just a string of games? Because last year they were up and down. They'd win 6 games, they'd lose 8. They'd win 4 in a row, lose 5. You know, 3, 4. But it was a trade-off, constant trade-off.
Yeah.
Is there a potential roadblock in that if they just decide, look, we've had it. We're 27-14. Let's take 2 weeks off. Like, is there a do you think there could be a potential problem between the coaching staff and calling out these young players if there starts to be an issue with just attention to detail or bringing it every night?
Yeah. So I don't think so, because the way Taylor Jenkins comes off is he's a player's coach and he trusts his guys, because he says, hey, this is your role. This is what you're going to do. And I want you to execute to the best of your abilities. And I think that's really how he handles it. If they don't, as long as they're giving effort, I think he allows them to kind of do what they feel like they need to do. The reason the Grizzlies were so up and down in the past, I wouldn't say it's more Taylor Jenkins. It was really more of Ja Morant. And the whole, you know, deal behind the whole text, or not the text, but the tweet that happened with myself, is because a lot of that happened with Ja. He was very much all about playing hard, and then some nights he would take off, whether he was tired or whether he was young and didn't understand. That's really where it came, you know, to where they were just kind of a big time roller coaster. And I think now he's growing up a little bit, speaking of Ja, that they are more consistent. But it's also, this team has played together for a couple of years now, to where these young guys all kind of came in together. They're a very tight knit group, to where they trust each other and they're very deep, as I talked about earlier. So yes, I do think that it could be something that hurts you, but what NBA coach doesn't kind of give in to their superstar player? Because I think every one of them does. You want to talk about
catering for sure.
Yeah, 100%. So who wouldn't cater to Ja?
Unless you're Emi Udoka of the Celtics, and then you're just always constantly calling out your team.
Yeah. And I also think that calling out your team is stupid, you know. And if we want to get into a local, let's talk about Penny Hardaway. Okay. Calls out his team publicly. I think that's the worst thing you can do, because what you do then is you hear about it from other ways. And what is that old school game that we always called the telephone game, where you heard something and then somebody changes just one word, and then two words change, and then the whole conversation is completely changed 10 people later? Well, imagine that's like that on Twitter, where then people are, you know, talking back and forth, and then it gets local, people are talking. The whole conversation changes a million times. So I do think that the way that Taylor Jenkins handles what's going on is crazy good. And I'll give myself a shameless plug. I have an interview that's coming out a week from now with a certain guy named Jonathan Sharks, who was a personal friend, who still is a personal friend of Taylor Jenkins. He grew up with him. And so we're going to get into a lot about Taylor Jenkins. And so if you do like the Grizzlies, if you do like hearing about, you know, Taylor Jenkins or just the Grizzlies overall, Jonathan Sharks from The Ringer will be joining us on Grizz 901 next week.
Yeah. Great guest plug right there. Definitely be listening to that. Cody, I do want to shift to you. Daniel, you can follow up with this one as well. Obviously, there is concerns with, well, maybe there's not concerns, but people are pointing out that Ja Morant's hyper-athleticism and lean body, and we saw it tonight with the crazy block that he had, two-handed skies to the top of the backboard to block that shot and just brings it the other way, is what is the longevity issue of Ja? If his game is not going to develop like Russell Westbrook and he's not getting an outside shot, which his shot has looked better from outside, but his game is predominated on rim pressure, which is one of the most valuable things you can have on an NBA team now, and hitting that floater. Do you feel like there is a risk for Ja that he's not going to have a 10-year career? Or is this a devastating injury in waiting to you?
I mean, like, the way he kind of flies around and stuff is kind of like, But also, like, that's something that, like, younger players, like, that are super athletic kind of do.
Yeah.
But, like, he also, like, kind of, like, I don't know. He's playing at a different level than he was playing at last year. And I don't know that. I mean, everyone's just like one, like, weird, like, landing on somebody's foot away from their career being over. So,
yeah, that's true. It's just every time he goes up, he's at the top of the backboard and he's what, 6'2"?
Yeah.
He's skinny and he lands on those, you know, the skinny pole legs.
but he has incredible body control.
He does have incredible body control. It's absolutely true. And it feels like, you know, kind of like Giannis, it seems like his ACL is a rubber band. Like, it's just,
I think it is a rubber band. That's how it is made.
Maybe that's what
it's constructed that way for everyone.
Yeah, that's fair.
Theirs might just be a little more elastic.
Elastic, yeah. Maybe I should have said more elastic rubber band. Maybe Jaws is, that's what it is. It's got a little wiggle to it, and he'll be fine.
Maybe he just got them removed, so he doesn't have to worry about it.
But is that one of the things that you think could, well, obviously it would derail the Grizzlies. Do you think that should be something that you would be worried about if you're the Grizzlies starting to build around him for the next decade?
If you're talking to me, no, I don't think that he is. I don't think that's something to worry about.
Anybody can answer. Cody obviously wasn't going to.
I was about to, and then Daniel said that, and I was forming like my thought.
But you shouldn't approach it that way, right? The risk. You shouldn't be built around that risk of, oh, he could get injured.
Yeah, I mean, like,
that's why we're going to keep Jaren Jackson Jr.
Right, that's why the Nuggets signed Michael Porter Jr. Because they couldn't factor injuries into it. They just had to go for it.
You make a great point.
The worst medical anyone's ever seen.
And they spent the money
So if you're the Grizzlies, Ja doesn't even have the worst medical you've ever seen. He's one of, like, the top 15 players in the NBA probably right now. Ooh, Anybody have a problem with that? Anybody have a problem with that statement? Ooh. That's kind of spicy, right? If he's one of the top 15, that's like, that might be an all-NBA spot. That's first, second, or third team. He's definitely at least going to be third team.
You think so?
At least.
Yeah. I would say he has to be if he keeps on like this.
He's 25, one of the top 15 rebounds, almost six rebounds.
Yeah, almost 25 points, almost six rebounds, almost seven assists. Yeah. So, and he leads the top four team in the West, and they stay in the top four, maybe get to three even.
Yeah,
he's definitely on an all NBA team. I feel like he's definitely on the All-Star team for sure.
How cool is it that the Grizzlies ended up getting the best player out of the draft with Zion and RJ Barrett and all those guys? Isn't that crazy? They drafted a guy from Murray State with the number two pick and somehow ended up like lucking into the best player in the draft.
And absolutely lucked into it from all the stuff that was going on.
Yeah, because they had to
conveying
like,
the pick.
Yeah, all that crazy all stuff. That stuff.
And it fell to two. And yep. They got Ja Morant out of it. Just
and they truly, lost the Zion lottery. But they ended up winning the draft.
And just purely luck. Purely luck. It's crazy.
Congratulations to the Grizzlies.
Now, maybe not talking about luck, but there is a larger scale about this team that I want, this kind of macro version I want to talk about this team. Because Taylor Jenkins, everyone always makes the comparison. Taylor Jenkins came from the Bucks organization and Mike Budenholzer. And what are the Bucks to? They play 10 guys, 10 to 12 guys, and they all contribute. And I get that completely, but I actually think the comparison is of the wrong Mike Budenholzer team. And I want to see what you think about this. To me, the Grizzlies are more like the 2013 to 2016 Atlanta Hawks. In the way they play and in the way that they're constructed. And here's my reasoning. I'm just going to give you the roster. And you kind of compare players from this Grizzlies team based on this Atlanta Hawks roster, which Taylor Jenkins was a part of. Kent Bazemore, Damari Carroll, Al Horford, Kyle Korver, Shelvin Mack, Paul Millsap, Dennis Schroeder, like Jeff Teague. So obviously there's not a Ja Morant level.
I was going to say, who's the point guard that is comparison?
But if I remember correctly about this team, I mean, they won 62 games in 2014, 2015, were the one seed in the East. And if I remember correctly, their starting lineup was Jeff Teague, Kyle Korver, Paul Millsap, Al Horford, and I believe it was Kent Bazemore, but I can't remember off the top of my head right now. But you go down the line on that roster, there are very comparable roles. Obviously, yeah. Jaw's the outlier, but there are very comparable roles to the way that Hawks team played that compares now to how the current Grizzlies are structured roster-wise and their future outlook. Now, obviously, the Hawks, much older team, and theirs basically was a three-year run and they were done, and they just had that one outlier year where they were 60 wins. But I think this is the pattern of the Grizzlies that we should actually be comparing it to. This is the formula that Taylor Jenkins is relying on, not what Mike Budenholzer did with the Bucks. That's a wrong comparison to me. I think that Taylor Jenkins is running everything off of the Atlanta Hawks model. Does that seem more appropriate to you, Daniel? Just thinking about giving you those names, the way they played, it was by committee, 10 guys, everybody contributed, and they won 60 games, 60 and 22. And this does get into another question that I will have to follow up, but do you think that's a better comparison for this team that we should be looking more into as a staple for what could be?
Yeah, so I do like that, but I also think that that can be more of a good regular season team when you're going 10 deep, right? And so, yes, that is great. And I do love that they are able to be that deep, but that's the whole reason that in Memphis that they've been talking about consolidation, right? You want to be really good eight deep. But a lot of times what happens is with injuries, you were 10 deep and you become eight deep because of injuries. So there's two ways to look at it. You want to be 10 deep. Eventually become eight deep because throughout the season you lose two guys due to whatever happens. Hopefully they're not your best players. So there's so many different ways to look at it, but I do think that that can be a very good regular season team. I don't know if that's the best playoff team.
That is exactly my follow-up question is this is going to be a great regular season team, just like the Utah Jazz. But when it gets to the playoffs and you have to shorten that rotation, does it become a weakness to where you have to give larger minutes? Is there more variability actually from going to a smaller rotation than sticking with that 10?
Wow.
I have an answer. Yes.
Go ahead, Cody.
Go ahead, Cody. Yeah.
So I think that there is value in having that 10-person roster, especially in the playoffs, especially if you are a smart coach. I think we saw this last year with Ty Lue and the Clippers, because depending on who you're matched up against, like, you might need different looks. And the Grizzlies, like, with the roster that they have, they do have versatility with some of the different players they have and different, like, lineups they can throw out there. So I do think on a – not necessarily on a game-to-game basis, but on a series-to-series basis, I do think that is an advantage that the Grizzlies have, because they have guys that can play, like, NBA basketball. Not a lot of guys on that team do have playoff experience, but the last couple of years they've been in the playoffs. A lot of those guys have played in some games. They gave the Jazz, you know, as much as they could handle last year. So it's, you know, just – it's one of those things that I think that it – sometimes when teams are really deep in the regular season, people look at it and say that, like, oh, well, in the playoffs, like, all those guys won't be able to play. But then you have teams that are really deep, like the Warriors, like the Grizzlies, that are really good, that have that personnel. And then you have, like, a coach that knows how to use those pieces and can, you know, look at a matchup with a specific team and go, okay, well, I'm not going to play this person that much because they're going to, you know, we're going to have to hide them on defense or whatever. But when you have – when you have a large roster that's versatile like that, you can do a lot of different stuff. And that's typically helpful in the playoffs.
Yeah. And to touch on that, a lot of people have talked about getting rid of Jonas Valanciunas to the Pelicans and bringing in Steven Adams. I think what's really adjusted is Steven Adams is used for his defensive abilities. And it is mainly also his passing on the offensive end, plus his screens, plus the backside screens where you're actually helping someone get to the basket because of your screens, but also the fact that they don't rely on the offensive, firepower from Jonas is a big thing, because now if you see their closing lineups, I think that what you're looking at a lot of times, it's not always Steven Adams that's closing in the fourth quarter. It's a lot of times it's Kyle Anderson who is able to be the four, which moves Jaren down to the five. And that really is dependent, you know, on matchups. And so I think the reason that the Grizzlies are so good right now is because they are very versatile, to the fact that if you're small, such as the Lakers, who want to go with LeBron as their five, well, okay, yes, Steven Adams is out, but now we're running Jaren as our five. Okay, cool. We're going small too. We're also going to put in, you know, Kyle Anderson if we need to, but also we have a bunch of 6'5 to 6'8 guys just loaded on the roster, which allows us to be a little big surrounded by our smaller point guard who is, you know, John, who is 6'2". So I do think the versatility is their biggest, you know, I guess, weapon right now.
That is interesting, because if we're just to look at the lineup, if we're looking at 8 to 10 guys, Ja, Desmond Bane, Dylan Brooks, Triple J, Steven Adams, Melton, Kyle Anderson, Tyus. I mean, are you going to play a rookie in Zaire Williams and Brandon Clark? I mean, it feels situational for these guys to go in at the end of the bench. So if you're talking about your top eight, and that's Tyus, Kyle, Anderson, Melton, Adams, Triple J, Dylan, Bane, Morant, is that a deep run playoff team?
Yeah. Go ahead, Cody.
I was just going to say, I don't know if it's a deep run playoff team, but it's definitely like,
is it a team that wins a series?
Who are they match up with right now in the playoffs?
I think it would be Denver, or let's say it's Denver, Mavericks, or the Lakers.
I think they win those. I think they can win any of those series.
Yeah, and honestly, I even think they match up well against Golden State. The two teams well, because you got to
beat them last year.
They did beat him last year, but also, you know, you are bringing Clay back, which, right, he came back tonight when we're recording this, and Clay's a different animal. I love Clay Thompson, but they are susceptible to a bad Curry night.
The Grizzlies right now, if the playoffs started, would play the Dallas Mavericks.
That is true, the Warriors are susceptible to a bad Curry night, and that is a problem if you're playing in the play-in game. But if the Grizzlies are playing the Warriors in seven games, I love the Grizzlies, but I just don't think that's a thing. Sorry. Yes,
but against the Mavericks. And
yeah, I'd say that's a five-game series.
That they would win?
Yeah.
Really? with the Mavericks pushing the Clippers the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. That's my biggest question about this team. Just trying to stay objective, not being, you know, a fan, is what should be my realistic expectation for this team when and if we get to the playoffs and they're still a high seed, they're still in the picture. A lot can happen in NBA season. You never know. Not saying anything's going to happen, but if they happen to climb or drop, whatever it is, do I realistically expect this team to exceed last year, which was a closer series? Cody said that earlier, that they gave the Jazz fits for 5 games. They did. That series was closer than what it appears just by the record. And a lot of those 4-1 series, for the most part, are closer than what they appear a lot of times. But that one definitely was close. Do I actually expect them to make that jump forward with switching out Triple J for Steven Adams? You know, that's what I'm not sure of. That's what I'm most interested by. But it's fun to enjoy the ride that it is now, because just like that Hawks team back then, they're going to be entertaining. They're going to play team basketball. They actually have a superstar on their roster instead of, you know, Dennis Schroeder. And it's just fun to watch night to night because they are bringing it right now. So I guess we'll kind of monitor them and see where they're at in a few weeks. I don't have anything really to add about this. I know we probably went a little long on Grizzlies talk because I don't know how long we'll take on this theory kind of thing, but we'll see. Anything to add about the Grizzlies, Dan, that you want to say before we move on?
No, just for the fact that I just want to enjoy it. And that's, you know, really what I kind of take back from the whole thing is, you know, enjoying these young teams. And I know that I'm very biased on the fact of the Grizzlies, but the simple fact that I'm enjoying teams that are playing well that should not be playing well. I enjoyed the Hawks, you know, when they had their little run. I did not believe in them. I still don't believe in them. That's why I feel like they're not as good, because I feel like they just kind of caught lightning in a bottle as they did. But I'm enjoying the teams that are like the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Grizzlies this year. I really do enjoy seeing these young players kind of ascend, because it's so funny seeing players like LeBron, who are now in talks of being the youngest who have ever done it. But he's also now in talks to being one of the oldest who have ever done it. And so he's going away because he now is 37. He's going away. It's so cool to really see these young guys coming up. And I really hate that we're missing Zion, because he's amazing. And if you gave the Grizzlies a chance to have the number one pick, would they take Ja over Zion?
Yes.
I don't know, man. That's still tough. That would be a hard.
No, I don't think that they would have. They would have assumed to beat it up.
I think it's so hard, even now, knowing what you know, because it's only been a couple of years.
They would have still taken Zion.
What's to happen? Like, I think Zion is a whole different beast, and I really miss that. I hate that we're missing him. And so I enjoy what's happening with these young guys, even Luka, who's still young. I enjoy seeing what the NBA is to come. And so that's what I take about all of it, is it's so exciting to see the future.
Yeah, that's well said. That's a great way to end that topic. Now let's get into some wild argumentation potentially. And I do what I asked you guys earlier is what we'll talk about is kind of all-star selection theory. And I saw this offered up on Twitter, and maybe it's not interesting to anyone else. And after kind of doing some research, I mean, it's not like a huge bias thing that we see a lot. So I'm interested to get your guys' takes on this, because I actually think a lot of time with all-star voting, we typically get it right. But the question was, do you agree with the idea that winning record teams should have and deserve more all-star selections than, say, someone having good stats on a bad team in a year? Cody, I'll start with you. Do you have a take or a thought for that? Should a good team like the Warriors deserve 3 all-stars? Is Andrew Wiggins a all-star because of the Warriors being the number one and number two teams in the league to start?
All right. So to start with, the All-Star game is a just celebration of the NBA. It does not matter for like anything really. It is just a fun weekend of like all offense. So for the All-Star game, I don't think it is important that wins are considered. I think that this is a there is somewhere where we do where we should take that into consideration, and that is the all NBA teams. Because those are like the All-Star team should just be who are the most popular players. Like, who do people want to turn on a game and watch play together? Because the All-Star team is like, it's a fantasy. It's one day where we get to see Steph Curry throw lobs to Giannis. We never get to see that, or Giannis throw lobs to Steph. We never get to see that any other time.
Right.
So that's what the All-Star game is. So like, whether, you know, like, you know, for all the qualms I've had about Zach LaVine being a good stats, bad team guy, like, Zach LaVine is entertaining to watch play basketball. So like, the All-Star game should just be about being an entertaining product for the viewer. The all NBA team, I think, is where the like historic, like stuff is really important, because that's where you're like looking at like who was really good, like who did, you know, who did things that like impacted the things on the court, you know, in the most significant way. But if Russell Westbrook makes an All-Star team, that's not going to hurt my feelings, because Russell Westbrook is a popular player. And if that's what people want to watch, that's what people want to watch.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there, and I'm not really.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
I'm not really sure where to start there, because I do want to go down multiple rabbit holes with that discussion, with the All-NBA, the popularity contest.
I'm a fox.
We use it when we talk about people's resume, how many All-Star games they're in. But like, here's an example for me. And if you're talking about the most popular players, and what would be most entertainment, are you for Rudy Gobert being on an All-Star team because the Utah Jazz are good every year, and that's going to be on his, that's going to be on his resume for the Hall of Fame, over someone who's on a really bad team, who's maybe, I don't know, flashier. And I cannot think of, you know, anybody that comes to mind right now. So this is probably a bad example, but
well,
the premise still remains the same. Like, Rudy Gobert has been an All-Star multiple times now.
Well, I think you got it right at the beginning when you said that, like, we do typically get it right in the voting, because like I was saying, like, the All-Star is, you know, essentially the premise of what I said is the All-Star's popularity contest. In order to be popular, like, you have to resonate with at least your own fan base. So like, people in Chicago have to like Zach LaVine, you know, for him to even be considered to be on the All-Star team. Does that make sense? Like, right. You have to have made at least some sort of impact in a way that people like you. Like, you're not just going to, like, you can't just be like, the no-name, like, Christian Wood's not going to be on the All-Star team because he's putting up 20 points a game for the Rockets, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's a fair point. Fair point.
But someone like, you know, but like I said, someone like Russell Westbrook, who maybe he's not doing a whole lot right now on the Lakers, like, he probably won't be an All-Star this year. But if, but like, for, say he like ripped off a run where he was like awesome and he's scoring like, you know, 25 points a game, he's grabbing 10 boards and like he's throwing out like 9 assists again, and he's like, you know, back to being old Russell Westbrook, then yeah, he should probably be an All-Star. Like, that's almost a triple-double.
So if you are, Daniel, I'll kind of flip it to you, since I'm interested by your takes on this. Like, if you were to choose between this year so far, Russell Westbrook and Darius Garland, I know they're not in the same conferences, so it doesn't apply, but if you were to choose one to be an All-Star over the other, who would you pick?
Easily Darius Garland.
Okay, but most people aren't going to do that, right? Because Russell Westbrook's going to get voted in.
Well, because, and, yeah, but you have casual fans versus, like, the three of us, like, know who the players are in the NBA and, like, know who's good and stuff. But
So this is the caveat with this, because the Lakers are actually not a good team, right? Like, right. They're a sub-500, middling 500 team. But they have the name brand, which is right, essentially yeah. Like having a winning franchise.
Just like the Celtics.
Yes, so it's the same kind of thing. So people like Darius Garland are up against it because right. Not only do you have this winning franchise, but you're also on a name brand franchise. So Russell Westbrook getting in over Darius Garland, I mean,
This is the Mike Conley problem.
This is the Mike Conley problem. Now, Dan, I know I cut you off from that. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I agree it's a popularity contest, and I think you want to have as much fun as possible. But I also think there's only so many awards to go around. And I think the All-Star game is an award in its sense, because you're awarded, I guess, a chance to be one of the top players this year at this very moment in the season. And Russell Westbrook, the stats, they aren't there. But also the wins, they aren't there. If you're the best player on a team, such as Bradley Beal was last year, and you're just so awesome, but the rest of your team just is so terrible, the only reason that you have some of the wins you have is because you're so awesome, and it should show. And you know what? I'm cool with you every now and then you getting awarded to be an All-Star. But on a continual basis, these big teams like Klay Thompson being fourth in the West in guards due to votes from the fans, that it's stupid. There should have to be a rule that you have to play so many games to be able to be allowed to be voted in. And there's no way that a player like that, no matter how much I love, you know, Klay, he should not be allowed to be voted in by the fans, because that skews the votes, which in the end, the players, the media, the coaches, whoever vote him in, he won't be a starter. He won't be an All-Star, but it just shows that the whole situation is kind of flawed due to just that little situation there.
Yeah. And this is probably going to get too far from the original argument about the theory. Maybe the theory argument is actually that the NBA All-Star game kind of feels rigged right now. Yeah. And it's a game that, you know, they're not actually playing, and maybe this doesn't matter in the long run, but it's interesting to think about. But maybe I just think it's rigged, because here's an on players getting selected, like it's very selective, and it's kind of like, oh, wait your time, young fella, you know, you'll be there. And then it's just like Mike Conley, and you're getting invited last second last year on the tail end of your career because of multiple injuries. That's the only way you get into the All-Star game. So maybe that's what I should have kind of centered it around, was more so that.
You know what I said to those people?
What?
Be more flashy. Like, be more marketable.
Be more marketable. But some of them can't control it, right? Because here's a scenario I'm going to give you. Two players, I'm going to give you their stats. In 29 games, player A, 24 points per game, 4 rebounds, 7.3 assists. Player 2, in 33 games, 22.3 points per game, 4.6 rebounds, 5.2 assists. Both teams are below 500. One team has, player A's team has 15 wins. Player 2's team, or player B's team, has 13 wins. Is there a big difference where one should be voted an All-Star over the other from just hearing those stats?
No.
Who do you think player A possibly could be?
LeBron. Russell Westbrook?
Is Damian Lillard, and player B is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
Oh, wow.
I don't think Dame Lillard will be an All-Star. That team is ass.
You don't?
I don't know.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because he's going to get the fan votes.
That's the thing, because that's the Russell Westbrook thing. So maybe that I shouldn't have, like, maybe the beginning, this is a two-parter, right? Yeah. We had the fan, the theory about if
the
you're
fan
a good
votes
player.
Makes every, the fan vote makes everything kind of weird, because, like, right. Because then you also, like, then we're only taking into consideration, like, votes in the U.S., but then you have, like, China, and, like, yes. They're going to vote for the people that they like. And then you have to, like, it's weird, because like you're talking about Rudy Gobert, but like he could potentially be fan voted in from all the people. Just everyone in France votes for Rudy Gobert.
Yeah. I mean, that's what this is. It's the bias. This is how we judge players, though.
Is it?
We look at this.
We just
record.
Look at their All-Star games.
We look at their All-Star games, all NBA teams, and their averages, shallow. And we're done.
We're just looking at All-Star games for, like, who's good at basketball?
When you look at basketball reference, what's the rundown that you look at? What's the banner listed for them?
Well, yeah, I mean,
nine-time All-NBA All-Star.
Yeah, they show that, but, like, I'm less concerned about how many All-Stars. You know what? When I look at that, you know what the All-Star thing is for me? I go, oh, interesting. But I never am like, oh, man,
I didn't know Allen Iverson was an all-star. Or I didn't, like, you know, like, I'm never, it's never something that, like, is super shocking. It's sometimes it's shocking how few times or how many times someone was selected. But I've never looked at that stat and been like, oh, I didn't know he was good at basketball. Or, you know, it's the other stuff that I'm looking at, like the all-NBA teams and the stuff like that, that, like, I mean, I know I meant, like, MVPs, like, you know, did you get an all-defensive team award? Like, are you the defensive player of the year? Like, that kind of stuff, like, makes a lot more difference to me than looking at an all-star team. Like, an all-star team is a nice feather in the cap, but it's not, you know, it's not the end-all, be-all, you know, this is what you, you know, play for.
Maybe, like, that's the continuation of that argument, is that we have fans, like, maybe that's the overall gripe, is it's rigged for the best players to get it, or the most marketable players to get it, which is, I guess it's supposed to be. It's an all-star game. You want your fans
That's why they open the fan vote, because they want the fans vote for the players they want to see, and then the fans turn the game on.
And then us as fans determine who was a good player in their career based on how many all-star appearances they
had. It's only 50% of the vote. Like, there's still another 50%. So if the fans do screw it up that bad and vote in someone like Clay Thompson, there's another 50% that will vote against it, and there's no way that they'll make it. So
it's 50% and 50%. Worst case, it's a tie.
So
okay, there's someone who will
breaks the tie. No, tell me what the rules
Mr.
are.
Silver.
Who breaks the tie?
Mr. Silver.
Oh, yeah, he wants that. He's gonna look a player in the eye and be like, "Yeah, I just didn't think that you had the."
No, they won't be
year.
A starter. They'll be the reserve.
Yeah, I know this is way off topic, on a rabbit hole, and I love it right now, so I'm gonna keep going. But casual NBA fan, if you put up a resume of someone and you compare Zach Randolph's resume to Paul Millsap's, and Paul Millsap is 2 or 3-time All-Star. Was Zebo one? Maybe?
Two.
He made two?
Two.
I mean, what are people going to think about that player if Paul Millsap has 3 or 4 All-Stars and Zebo has two?
I don't know. Why don't they look at their careers?
That's what I'm saying. Is like,
people are stupid. They won't.
Okay.
But people don't just – but, like, who? That's the kind of the problem, though. People are – the casual fan doesn't even really care. They're going to go, oh, 12-time All-Star. Great. Oh, 11-time All-Star. Guess he wasn't as good as that guy. But, like, those people don't actually, like, if that's how you're viewing basketball, then, like, that's a fundamental problem with how you view basketball. If you view it through the lens of all-star teams, like, cool. Like, you know, who was the best at jersey sales? Man, that guy must have been really good at basketball. I mean, have to be good at basketball to sell jerseys, but that's not actually an indication of whether or not you were the best player.
That's why we're here, okay? This is how we can kind of end this, is that – casual NBA fans, you should not look at the All-Star game and the All-Star selections and think this guy was, you know, one of the best of his playing time. Right. Is what we should say. You should enjoy the All-Star game for what it is. It is a fan experience that should have no hold or marking on a player's season or career.
No, yes or no? Yeah, it's a showcase. It's a showcase of the NBA, of the best of the NBA, and so it's essentially it's a commercial, right? It's an advertisement for the NBA. Like, look at all these guys we have. Like, you can watch them play all year, which is great. But they don't give Samuel L. Jackson a f-ing Oscar for being in all those Capital One commercials. They give him the Oscar for being in the movie.
Why? Wow!
You know?
I don't even know. I don't know how to continue that.
I don't know how to end it, because it got off way off from my original point. And that was, you know, do the best teams deserve multiple All-Stars? And I think we kind of land on that. No, they don't deserve multiple All-Stars. Like, Andrew Wiggins should not be an All-Star just because they're whatever, 29-9. And that's just not how we should treat this. It should be based on, you know, actual merit of the season, but all of the popularity contests, the nature of the All-Star game gets into the way of that. And of course, we got on the rabbit trail talking about history and everybody's, you know, future Hall of Fame status. So that was a fun conversation. I know it got way off, but it's nice to be back together again. So let's wrap this up. I know we went long. We said we're going to try to be shorter, but embellish a little bit on the Grizzlies and got off on the rabbit trail on the All-Star theory. But Daniel, do you have anything to plug before we go for next week?
No, nothing really that major, but I do have some things in the works. I am currently in talks, and I believe that I am almost 100% true that I will be interviewing Tom Izzo, the legendary coach from Michigan State.
Bow, bow, bow.
Michigan bow, State. Bow. Tom Izzo. Yeah, so should be interviewing him early in the week. I'm not exactly sure when exactly we're interviewing due to COVID protocols going on right now. They were not able to play Michigan. And so they said that right now we're kind of, you know, we're in the hole pattern, right? So we're not exactly sure what's going on with that. They do have a game coming up this Wednesday. So I'm hoping that I can interview him early in the week. But at the end of the week, 100%, we are interviewing Jonathan Sharks from the Ringer, as I talked about earlier. They will both be on Grizz 901. So just kind of stay tuned to that. If you want to check it out, go to at Grizz _lead. You'll have those as well. But also, if you're enjoying the podcast network, there are some good things to come. We have a couple of shows that were just recently taken off. They are going on to do other things, which is very cool for the Lead Sports Media, that people are kind of, getting paid, we'll say, to do bigger and better things, even more than what we can offer at the moment. And so we're going to let them go on and do their thing. But we have a couple more shows that are upcoming that's in the works. So stay tuned to that.
Cody, anything to plug?
Nope.
Nothing at all. That's Cody. He's back this week after a couple week hiatus. So it's nice to have everyone back together again. Yeah, please like, subscribe our show. Go to the Leeds Podcast Network, having a little a season of change, as you might say, and looking for shows and moving stuff around. So it's always an adventure. It's always fun. So thanks for tuning in as we kick off this new year. A lot better than last week, where I could barely think straight. So it was nice to be all back together again at maybe what to me is 100% mental capacity, even though everyone and you guys might not agree I'm at 100% mental capacity all the time, but it's nice to feel better. So thanks for tuning in. Everyone have a good week. Go Grizz, and we'll see you guys next Monday.